Welcome to NHL Draft Class. I am Adam Kimmelman here, as always, with Mike Morial. Mike, we are inside of 30 days for the draft, but the Combine is coming up soon. We have a great guest today to talk about the Combine.
Yep, 91 players going to the Combine, Adam. We will have David Gregory, who we usually have on this time of year to discuss the Combine, if there's anything new going on. We discuss some of the players, some of the top players, some of the players he feel could be, you know, exceptional talents maybe 4 or 5 years down the road. So always a pleasure to get David on. And we're looking forward to the Combine, right, Adam? This is going to be a lot of fun. We got 57 forwards, 29 D, 5 goalies that are going to the Combine, going to be tested, going through the interviewing stage that we enjoy so much. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I'm still waiting for the chance to tape you into one of those bike pedals and let you go and take one of those tests. That would be fun to watch. Maybe that'll be for a podcast down the road. But for now, let's bring in David Gregory from NHL Central Scouting. David, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us today on NHL Draft Class.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I love being here. It's always great to talk about these draft-eligible players and the upcoming Combine, so appreciate you guys having me here.
Always great to have you on this time of year, David. There are two new tests to be introduced to the prospects this year in Buffalo, the isokinetic squat test and the 10-meter sprint. Can you maybe give us an idea why these tests were added and the benefits of them?
Well, as you guys know, you've been at the Combine for a number of years. We've always tweaked a little bit of what the protocol will be just to give the teams exactly as much information as they can get from these young players. It's something that you don't always want to add tests because you like historical data, but when something is new that can help you evaluate a player, you look at it. So the isokinetic squat is something that's, you know, it's assessing the lower extremity strength, which is really important in hockey, obviously. You have to have your core low all the time when you're skating, and that strength is important to test. And you know, it's on a motorized resistance device that is really an interesting test. It'll be good to see it for the first time with these young players, but it will, you know, they get it 3 to 5 reps to test their lower body strength. So it's something that I think will be a good test, to add to what, you know, teams are getting from the evaluation. And the sprint is, again, it's another new test where it's testing how quickly you can get up to speed and what speed you can, you know, generate in a short period of time, which is, again, a great thing for hockey because obviously you're going for 30 to 60 seconds and going quick speed and quick access to on the ice that you need to know that. And there's a cable attached to the player that's going to track what kind of strength they have and how quickly you can get up to speed. And that's an assessment from someone who doesn't understand, you know, off-ice testing like the strength coaches do. So that's the best I can give you guys.
Well, David, we're going to have Mike try both of those when we get to the Combine. It's fun yes, to see it in action. Yes. All right, so let's talk about actual hockey players. And right at the top of the Central Scouting North American rankings, it's Gavin McKenna. You know, I watched a McKenna Project documentary on TNT the other night, which was fantastic. If you haven't had a chance to watch it yet, definitely try to find it. And you see, like, how the sentiment kind of swings pretty significantly in both directions for McKenna going number one. Then, you know, he's a bust. Then he's number one again after World Juniors. So you see it with a different eye. But was there a moment for you this season as you're watching Gavin McKenna that cemented for you he's the best player in this year's draft class?
Well, obviously, we've known about Gavin for a number of years. But for him to make the jump that he did and make that decision, you know, there was all kinds of questions. Why did he make the jump? What was the reasons? But the reality is he wanted to challenge himself and playing again, being a 17, 18 year old playing against sometimes up to 25 year old players, you know, that's a huge challenge. And the way that he adapted, watching his growth over the course of the season, really cemented for me why he's number one. Like, one of the things that I've learned over the years doing this job is that players that project well and their trajectory is always in the right direction over the course of the year cements for me how they're going to perform at the next level. And, you know, really from the beginning of the year all the way through, that Gavin did that. So there was never a doubt in my mind that this is a player that you can't pass up at number one.
If you haven't seen it yet, the McKenna Project doc on TNT was well done. The film tracks McKenna's journey across the continent from his backyard rink to Whitehorse, Yukon, all the way to Penn State with several important stops in between. So definitely fans
It's
out there.
amazing. It's an amazing journey. It really is, and gives you a whole perspective on this young man and what he's done as a player on the ice, but what he is off the ice as well. And for me, really special human being.
So at the final meetings, Dave, we touched on this a lot. I touched on it with you and a lot of the other scouts. Ivar Stenberg of Frölunda is standing out for his country right now at World Championships. 8 points, four goals in seven games for Sweden. He's on a line with Lucas Raymond and Viggo Björk, who's another draft eligible centerman in this June. Sweden advanced the quarterfinal round now. So Stenberg, like McKenna, right, Dave, has another gear. But that said, McKenna might be the most creative player in this draft class. But in your eyes, maybe what's the difference between the two left wings, in your opinion?
Well, one of the things that's really special about Stenberg is that he can score in multiple ways. Like, if you watch a highlight reel of all his goals, he's scoring from distance at some point. He's got a tremendous release, very deceptive release, shoots the puck on the fly. Like, he's an NHL shooter already. But then he'll be backdoor and play without the puck. He surveys it so well. Like, he's going to go to that spot where he gets this easy backdoor goal. But that's hockey sense. That's something that, you can't almost teach, but you can see. And he's one of these players that has that. So, he's making a push to say, hey, I'm potentially the best player available this year based on his play. There's no question about it. But, they're two different kind of players. But I think from, what Gavin has proved is, how elite his sense is and how creative he can be with the puck, and what Ivar's doing is showing that, hey, I can play with elite players. I can play with NHL player right now and be the one that's driving and producing. So they're really intriguing to have these two players at the top of the draft class this year. It's going to be really something special.
So, David, right below those two top forwards, there's five defensemen that seem to have separated themselves from a very deep group. Chase Reed from Sault Ste. Marie, Albert Smits, who plays for Munchen in Germany, the Latvian-born kid, Carson Carroll from Prince George, Daxon Rudolph from Prince Albert, and Keaton Verhoff from the University of North Dakota. I'm going to put you on the spot here. If you could have one of them for the next 10 years on your team, who would it be and why?
I only get 10 years, Adam. That's it.
That's it.
Well, yeah, okay.
Ha
The one thing about this, there's been a couple drafts in my tenure doing this job where it's so deep at the top. It's kind of like, okay, let's see who the other team takes, and I'll be happy with who's left. It's kind of the same thing this year, to sort of dodge the question a little bit. Like, I would love all of these players, but and I've only seen Smits on video. But he looks so pro ready right now. And Mike was in our final meeting where we kind of challenged the guys in Europe, like, why isn't he your number one? They were raving about him so much. It's like, oh my gosh, this sounds like a guy I should take first. And he wasn't their number one pick, their number one listed guy. But all that being said, there's something about Chase Reed for me. I had the luck of seeing his first OHL game when he got brought up from the OJ. As an underage, and I immediately called Nick Smith, who's one of the guys on our staff. I'm like, who is this guy? Like, this guy's like the best player on the ice. Like, why don't we know about him? And obviously he was moving up pretty quickly, but then watching him from there on, there's just been a lot of special qualities, and seeing how he performed at World Junior, jumping into that environment and really eventually taking over as the top defenseman on his team for the USA. There's a special quality. I think that's going to transition to the NHL very well. And so, to answer your question, Adam, I'll take Chase Reed for 10 years and be very happy about it.
Yeah, I don't think you can go wrong, right, Dave, with these defensemen. And I remember the debate at the final meetings between all the scouts when you were talking about them. I mean, to Daxon Rudolph and Reeder. I mean, these guys are exceptional, and they each have their own type of style and the way they play and the way they attack the the opposition. So it's going to be interesting to
You,
see what happens. Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
you saw the debate. Like you have John Williams and Tim Campbell talking about what they're seeing in the Western League all year long with Rudolph and Carroll's. Like, how do you pass on these guys? Like these are tremendous players. And then you listen to the rest of our staff, and they like you think about what's happening in the Quebec League with Belisle and Villeneuve, like, and then the Ontario League with Chase Rea, like. Come on, there's some amazing choices if you're looking for a blue liner for sure.
So, Dave, to you, who might be one or two of the best shooters, goal scorers of this class? And name for us, if you can, maybe one or two of the best power forwards.
I think one of the best scorers in this draft might be JP Hurlbut. Like this player can really score in a lot of different ways. We all already mentioned, obviously, talking about Stenberg, who can score in a lot of different ways, but he's another player that's a really elite scorer. And Nikita Klepov in Saginaw, a great player that, he scores in a lot of different ways as well. So those are a couple, I guess, shoot, if you're asking for shooters in a sense, Mike, that those guys are players that can score a lot of different ways and have excellent shots, excellent releases. Power forwards for me, maybe one of the best is in the from the North American list is Belchez, Ethan Belchez at Windsor. I look at, he plays with Greentree and other guys that are top picks, and he's ahead of them at this time in his development. I think he's someone that's going to really translate well to the next level as a power forward. And Casey Mutrin, who's with the US team, I think over the course of the year proved like he's one of these players that's going to play that power forward game and is going to find a role with a team that you could get a really sneaky good player later in the first round potentially. That's maybe answers that question for you.
So, David, one of the big overarching stories of the season has been the CHL players making their move to the NCAA for the first time this season. A few of them did it in their draft year. We talked about Gavin McKenna, Keaton Verhoef going to North Dakota, Tynan Lawrence making the move to BU, especially Lawrence's case, since he went from the USHL to Boston University halfway through the season. How did it change how you evaluated just those players, but him, Lawrence in particular, because now it's 17 and 18-year-olds going from playing in their peer group to playing against 23 and 24-year-olds in some cases. For you, for scouting in general, what were some of the challenges that you kind of butted up against that really you had never had to deal with before?
First off, with that rule change and allowing, CHL players to play college hockey, it made for the best college hockey I've seen in all the years I've been doing this. Like the level of play was off the charts. There's no easy opponent anymore. Everybody's got really good players. So the challenge for a young player like Lawrence, for example, to make that jump, especially midway through the season, I think was a tremendous one. He obviously proved himself in the USHL in his previous underage year, and he fought some injuries early on in this season. But what was really impressive is by the end of his season with Boston University, to me, he was their best player. So at that young age to adapt that quickly, and there were some questions, oh, he's not scoring that much. But if you watch the games, how he was impacting the games and the opportunities he created, maybe there wasn't the finish there, but by the end of his season, he was finishing or contributing to finishing. And, he's just proven that, okay, that next step is not too hard for him. So, if you looked at only the stat line while he went to Boston University, you'd say, oh boy, what happened here? But if you watch the games, there's no doubt what kind of player he is and how he adapted, and tremendous to do that because it's so hard to do, in my mind, with the level of play that was in college hockey this year.
Yeah, and I think he's only going to get better, right, Dave? You think of the coaching staff there with Jay Pandolfo and Jay, when I spoke to him late in the year, he did say that Tynan really came into his own those last three, four, five games. He just wished that there was more of a runway for him to continue that development there. But he's in a good spot right now. It's going to be interesting to see where he falls in this draft, because obviously as one of the top centers, it's a premier spot. Caleb Malhotra, who I know you're very high on, is one of those. And then, as we mentioned earlier, Viggo Bjork, from Sweden, is another centerman, maybe undersized a little bit, but you know teams are looking at him and what he has to offer. It's been great stuff here, Dave. Just to close it out, maybe you can give us a couple players we didn't discuss today who you feel be drafted, and maybe with that proper development as we're talking about, could transition into a solid NHL player down the road.
Well, you just mentioned his name. One player I would have said is Caleb Malhotra for sure. He's just the complete package with hockey sense, skating ability, and just you know his how he competes as well. Like the three things you really need to play at the next level. He's very good or elite at all of them. So he's a player that can, I think, transition to the NHL very quickly and be a contributor. I think a real interesting player that might surprise people how high he might go is Wyatt Cullen. Again, he is a player that grew tremendously over the last couple of years from it. Like, so his size is no problem for the NHL, but his strength hasn't come yet. But that elite skill and that elite mind, I think is going to be a player that will, you know, show up and be very special at the NHL. Like that, he just does some things that no other players do. He's one of those players that, you know, when you watch a game, everybody says that guy, number seven, he was really good. Who's he? Yeah, you notice him because he's doing things that other players just don't do.
Well, that's all great stuff, David. We'll have to keep an eye, obviously, on Wyatt Cullen, Caleb Malhotra, and all these top prospects for the 2026 NHL draft. But thank you so much for lending us your expertise today on NHL draft class.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime. Really enjoy listening to all your podcasts and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Always great stuff there, Adam, from David Gregory. You know, the combine in general, it's something we always enjoyed. We've been going for so many years now. And it's come a long way, right? Remember the days of the fitness testing in the basement in Toronto for 28 years, was at the Whiston Bristol Palace and the International Center. And the thing that's always amazing to me about the combine and what we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years is if you go back 10, 15 years, the prospects were kind of so overwhelmed. But now it's impressive how well the players, you know, get the support of their junior teams, their agents, how prepared they are for the event, whether it's the testing phase or whether it's the questioning phase. They used to have that deer in the headlights look, and were a little apprehensive when they got there. But now it just seems like things kind of flow. They go with the flow and the questioning, and we're able to get a few of these players on NHL draft class, which we will again. You know, they're so well spoken, and they know exactly what to say, but they're not as robotic as they used to be, you know, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, and again, the interview process is sort of where we kind of have our biggest input in what happens and how things go. And just I remember years past, as you mentioned, when we were at the Toronto Bristol Westin Place, just crammed into this uncomfortable hotel. And they used to be the NCAA players had, I believe, 36 hours to come to the combine. So they would come in, they would do 26 or 27 interviews in one day, then do their testing, and then right back on a plane back to wherever their NCAA home is, because if they were there a minute past 36 hours, they could lose their eligibility. So I tell the kids now this, and their eyes go like saucer plates. Like, you can't believe sitting through 26 or 27 of those 15-minute interviews with teams back to back to back from 8 in the morning till 5 o'clock at night. It's insanity. So the way it's done now, and a lot of that falls on EJ Maguire, the former director of Central Scouting, and Dan Marr and his staff that have continued through to just improve the combine year after year after year and make it better. And David talked about the additions of some of the strength and fitness testing. That stuff's driven by the team strength and conditioning coaches. It's just such a better atmosphere, just all of it, from the interview process. The players are more prepared, the players are more comfortable, just everything's better about it with it being in Buffalo the last, I don't know, however many years it's been, but it's just been a tremendous event now, and it just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And in addition to talking about the combine and the new events, which was great, David gave us a little bit of an insight into what the players can expect and what we as the media can expect as well. I thought it was real interesting, right, Adam? The player discussion that we did have, and the one thing, like as I'm listening to David talk about Gavin McKenna, and we asked him a few questions there about McKenna. I think people forget, Adam, that these are 17 and 18-year-old kids sometimes. And David mentioned that for him to make that jump, now look, we know there's NIL involved, there is money involved, but he could have stayed at Medicine Hat, scored 170 points, and we wouldn't even be having this discussion. People might be looking at McKenna as a generational talent because he scored, 60 some odd goals and 170 points with Medicine Hat. But he decided to make that jump. And look, he struggled in the early going. We all saw it. But once things started to come together for him, got himself together, and he really pushed. And it was right after that World Junior Championship that we saw him, that he played so well, was able to put up a lot of points and maybe change the narrative a little bit. Second half of the season, he exploded for Penn State.
And again, I want to kind of go back to the McKenna project a little bit. And I talked to Matt Becker, I believe is the gentleman's last name, who directed the movie. And he was there from beginning to end. And he saw all the online discourse because he would talk to McKenna about it. And he said some of the stuff that you would see and Gavin would see and hear, it would make you want to lay in bed, pull the head covers over your head and not get up. And one of the things that stood out is, as much as McKenna, as well as he played on the ice, it's how he handled everything off the ice. And I know he had the incident at the bar and all that nonsense, but the fact that he never sort of blinked, and to your point, he could have stayed in Medicine Hat, had 180 points, and this wouldn't even be a discussion. But would he be a better player from just staying and being the big fish in a small pond? To take that opportunity, and look, he didn't turn 18 until December 20th. So he played pretty much the first half of the season as a 17-year-old in college, and he did pretty well for himself. So, all the discourse that, oh, he's not this or he's not that or his competitiveness or his play away from the puck, all that stuff. Like, to me, there was never a question who the best player in this year's draft class was. Because if you switch him with almost any other player, they're not going to have as good a season as McKenna ended up having, where he finished tied for fifth in scoring among NCAA players, second among freshmen, had the outstanding run at the World Juniors. To me, he is the best player in this year's draft class. And other people might have felt differently, or they might still feel differently. I don't know. But to me, it's, Ivar Stenberg had a great year. Albert Smits had a great year. Chase Reed, you can line up all the top guys in this year's draft class. To me, it was never a question that Gavin McKenna wouldn't be the best player available.
And I also felt the defensive discussion that we had. There are several, as we've been racking our brains, right, Adam, trying to determine who might be that top defenseman taken. And Chase Reed has always been up there for me, and Carson Carles has always been kind of up there. You've had Smeets at the top of your list. In fact, you had him going number two to San Jose in our most recent mock draft. But I'm kind of right now, I'm kind of with David's philosophy on Chase Reed and what we've seen, and going through what he went through, some the adversity that he faced before finally getting to the O, and once he reached the O, to excel the way he did, for Sault Ste. Marie. And a lot of scouts that I've spoken to, since the lottery, really like Reed and just the stability. He's a stabilizer back there. He does a little bit of everything, not too much of one thing, but he just does a little bit of everything, I think, is kind of the vibe that I get with Chase Reed. And of course, we've watched him and we've seen him and we've seen the same type of thing. And the best comparison that I've made for Chase Reed is a Zach Werenski. Just the stabilizing force back there with the long stick, go, good size at 6'3", 195. So I like Chase Reed, but I'm telling you right now, the Carles kid is very close for me for Prince George. And I've been kind of going back and forth when we finally come out with our final mock drafts, which will be a month from now. But I still know that you deep down, And based on the questions that you've been asking, Adam, I know Smits is still a player on your radar.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Of those five defensemen we talked about, did any of them play at the World Championship?
No.
One is Albert Smits is there. Did any of them play at the Olympics?
Well, there you
One
go
of them
again.
did. Albert
Yeah.
Smits was there. And it's not like he was just taking up a roster spot either place. You know, he is a top guy against NHL level players already. Watched a World Championship. I think he was plus two again in 20 some odd minutes against the US the other day. You know, he is a guy that is excelling already against NHL players. He's 6'3", he's 210 pounds. He might be the most NHL ready prospect to me in this year's draft class because you've already seen what he can do against NHL players, and he doesn't just stand out. He doesn't just hold his own, he stands out. He plays his game. I think there's more offense in his game than what we've seen, and I think that'll come over time as he gets more comfortable playing with and against, you know, men, older developed players. To me, you can sort of draw the through line of Victor Hedman to Moritz Seider to Albert Smits. He's not going to be an end-to-end, you know, guy like Cale Makar where he's going to take the puck from behind his own net, wheel out, beat all five guys and score. But he's going to be a guy that you build your defensive core around. He's big, he's strong already. To me, he's the best defenseman in this year's draft class. And I asked David, who would you want for 10 years in your team? And he said Chase Reed. To me, I'll take the guy who I already know what he's going to do. And that's Albert Smits. And he already looks like an NHL player to me.
And the interesting thing is that the Keaton Verhoff, the discussion on Verhoff, he was real high coming over from the Canadian Hockey League last year to the University of North Dakota. Hasn't been a lot of discussion about him too, and you're looking at a player that really had historical production for a U18 NCAA D1 defenseman, 6'4", 208, right shot, and the ceiling is still very high for this player because he is very raw. We saw some hiccups here and there at North Dakota, but for the most part, just a steady presence, big presence. And once he kind of gets, finds his mojo and what he's able to do against bigger, stronger players, Verhoff is a player I think is it could be a steal in this draft if he goes, if he drops out of like the top six, seven picks, Adam.
Well, I don't know if he's going to drop that far, but I talked to Dane Jackson, his coach at North Dakota, and an NHL scout, and they basically said pretty much the same thing. When Verhoff tries to skate and be that end-to-end guy, it doesn't work as well. But when he moves it quick, when he's smart with his puck decisions and quick with his puck decisions, he's an outstanding player. And you mentioned the size, you mentioned the skill, the skating, it's all there. He just needs to learn a little bit more puck management skill. And again, he's a guy who looks like you could eventually build your defense around. The skill is all there. The maturity is going to come. The offensive ability, it's all quite obvious. So, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know if you can go wrong with any of those five guys that we've been talking about. Smits, Carrolls, Rudolph, Reed, Verhoff, any of them. They all look like they're going to be really good NHL players.
Yeah, and then later in the draft, you have those offensive defensemen, undersized, but certainly players that are very, very, as far as in that range from maybe 15 to 25. You got the Ryan Lynn from Vancouver, Tommy Blyle from Moncton, Xavier Villeneuve from Blainville. So, real good offensive defensemen there that if teams are going to go forward early in the draft, and they have multiple picks in the first round, you could strike it rich with an offensive defenseman, one of those three players.
Yeah, and you mentioned Xavier Villeneuve and Tommy Blyle. We talked about those guys in a previous episode with JF Damfus, the senior Eastern scout from Central Scouting who covers the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. So you can go back and listen to that, as well as John Williams. We talked to him about Carson Carrolls and Daxon Rudolph when we talked about the top Western Hockey League prospects. So all of that is there for you to listen to at NHL Draft Class. Go back and listen to our previous episodes and stay tuned for what's to come, Mike. We're heading up to Combine, shuffling up to Buffalo
Love it.
very soon. All good things as we get closer and closer to the draft. But for now, NHL Draft Class is dismissed.